This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The founder of the Thrive Collaborative in Ann Arbor says net zero homes can change the way we think about energy and power for our homes. Matt Grokoff lives in a net zero house himself. He says the idea is that houses and other buildings generate as much energy as they use.
Our children are going to grow up in a world where they'll live in all electric homes powered by the sun right there on their own site. And they don't have to worry. They're going to look at us and say, a power outage? Daddy, what's a power outage? Oh, back in the day when a tree limb hit a power line, the power would go out. But now we have these solar panels and these batteries in the basement.
Matt Grokoff spoke with WMUK's Andy Robbins by Skype. Grokoff was the keynote speaker for Western Michigan University's Net Zero Conference in June.
What exactly is a net zero building?
A net zero building is pretty simple. It's a building that harvests all of its energy that it needs on site over the course of the year without combustion and powered with renewable energy. So, for example, my own home we bought in 2006. It was built in 1901. So it's a 117-year-old folk Victorian home with no insulation, asbestos siding, no insulation in the attic. And we were able to upgrade all the appliances, upgrade the HVAC system, put in a geothermal system, put in as much insulation as we could into an old house. It's worth noting that we actually did this to historic preservation standards. And then after reducing that energy so much and then making the house more comfortable and then putting solar panels on the roof in 2010, we have not paid a utility bill since March of 2011. And over the course of the year, we produce more energy than we consume over the course of that year. It's pretty simple. And most importantly, it's entirely necessary. We're going to have to see a lot more net zero buildings going forward in the future if we're going to manage the quickly changing energy fields and climate change.
Now, your house, as you mentioned, is quite elderly, if I can use that term, but could be successfully.
No one's ever used that term, but that's a great word for it. Yeah, but it's got great bones. It doesn't have osteoporosis.
Yeah, it's a maybe vintage is a better term for it.
That's a great term.
So obviously, we're not talking about just new buildings, but if a new home or new building is being constructed, are people starting to build structures with this idea in mind?
Yes. In fact, California is requiring that all new homes and buildings be built to this standard going forward. It's happening virtually all over the world. The first step for this is really just electrification. A lot of cities have pledged to, you know, maintain part of the Paris Climate Accords, and the Paris Climate Accords basically calls for a certain level of CO2 reduction in the atmosphere. And if we're to achieve those goals, we have to stop burning these old school fuels, stop digging things out of the ground and shipping them around the world or to other states like we do in Michigan, and harvesting the energy from elsewhere and then bringing it to where you need it. With the net zero concept, you're actually harvesting the energy where it is used, right there on the site. And so it operates as elegantly as things in the natural world, as flowers and trees do. They don't get to go across the street to get the energy or a drink of water. They have to harvest those things right where they are. And they're sustainable without us and without man-made machines. They create their own biological machines. So in a sense, these renewable energies are getting back to those biological process using human-made machines.
Are most of these buildings using some form of solar energy to derive their energy, or are there other ways to do this?
Yeah, most buildings are using solar power to harvest the energy. Wind is a wonderful option. In fact, wind is one of the least expensive forms of energy on the planet right now. Interestingly enough, the price of solar has dropped so much that it is now the cheapest energy on the planet. Arizona just announced a deal for less than 2 cents a kilowatt hour on the wholesale level. So you can imagine in Michigan, we're spending 15 cents a kilowatt hour on the retail side of things. If DTE were able to deliver that energy to us or harvest that energy for 2 cents a kilowatt hour, then they could lower our utility bills overall over time.
I gather that there's this concept of being, you know, off the grid, where you're pretty much you're generating all of your own energy all of the time, but you don't have to be that to be a net zero building, correct?
No, there's a big misconception about net zero energy as being off grid. There was a short time where if you Googled off the grid, my house came up, and there was a huge misconception about that. And nature doesn't do off grid. It does on network. Those are the most resilient systems. So what we're really looking for is an internet of energy. So you have pockets of energy being harvested, pockets of energy being stored, shared amongst itself in very local levels, and then connected to other pockets of energy that are being harvested and stored as well. So you, just like the internet, you have different nodes of energy, neighborhoods, homes, buildings that are producing their own energy and have their own infrastructure, and then are connected with the macro grid, the what we call now the grid. And those smaller networks of energy can share energy with the bigger networks of energy and move these electrons as the big grid does now. But instead of being produced in a central place, it's produced everywhere. It's produced on rooftops. It's produced in fields. It's produced on shorelines. It's produced on mountaintops. It's produced everywhere. But most of the energy is being produced right where it is being consumed, and then shifted for the time of day through battery storage and things like that. And the cost of batteries and solar has come down so much that places that have had issues with resiliency, where there's been severe weather events. So New York State after Hurricane Sandy, Miami after the hurricane last year, Houston, Texas, Puerto Rico, all of these places are now very heavily investing in solar and battery storage. And Australia, who, you know, is not an energy rich nation and they've got to ship everything across a vast ocean, has had dramatic issues with their energy grid. So they are now shifting away from these centralized coal plants to giant renewable energy fields, rooftop solar and battery storage to create what they're calling virtual power plants. And Germany is really the pioneer in this. There's companies like Sonnen Battery who are actually running what they call, again, virtual power plants. So they'll put a solar panel up on your roof. You can put a battery pack in your basement if you choose to. And then there's larger areas where there's fields full of solar and battery packs. And you in Germany, you can actually sell energy back to other people on that network of energy. So it's really this networked grid rather than a linear boxed grid that we have now, that if the current system, if a squirrel chews on a line like it did years ago and knocked out the entire eastern seaboard, the entire grid goes down when a tree limb falls on a local transformer. Whereas net zero energy buildings with solar power can be part of microgrids. And what happens there is that if the larger grid system goes down so that these other smaller systems can't share energy with each other, they may not be able to share energy during that storm event, but they'll be able to continue using energy that they are currently harvesting and energy that they previously stored, and then continue to do that until the storm event stops. So you don't have these 10-day power outages anymore. You have these really, really resilient microgrids.
Can this also be used for, you know, very large buildings like, you know, the skyscrapers in New York and Chicago?
Yeah, that's an interesting place. I mean, obviously, the taller you go, the more difficult it is to harvest your own energy. That's why we don't have 2,000-foot tall trees, right? They would grow that tall if they could harvest enough energy and harvest enough water. We kind of sever that relationship with nature, and we just keep building taller and taller and taller until nature pushes back a little. So yes, tall buildings are more challenging, but that's, again, there's all kinds of innovations there. While they have small rooftops, they have lots of glass surfaces. There are buildings now that are looking to, clad the entire sides of the building in solar panels. There's a building in taller building in Pittsburgh that I believe is targeting to be the tallest net zero energy building in the world. But that said, not every building has to be net zero. That's what solar fields and wind farms are all about. You can have this combination of distributed energy, some centralized energy, but even the centralized energy can be very near to the users. We don't need to be building a solar field the size of the state of Arizona out in the desert and put power lines to power the entire country with the solar they harvest in Arizona. That's not necessary. Every region of the country, including Alaska, has the ability to harvest a lot of energy. The world's leader in solar right now one of the world's leaders in solar is Germany, and they're much farther north than Michigan is. There's a building in Seattle called the Bullitt Center, which is home of the Living Future Institute, and it's a six-story building. It's about the size of a Ann Arbor City Hall building. It's a pretty large building. 6 stories tall with a basement. It harvests 125% of all of the energy that it needs right there on site. So every year it's putting 25% more energy back to the grid than it's taking from it. It doesn't even have a sewer tap. It's even harvesting all of its own water. So with this, with off-the-shelf technology and just really smart engineering, they've created a building that is operating as elegantly as a flower, harvesting all of its energy and water right there on site and creating almost no waste coming out of that building. What's neat about that is that to give you an idea of Seattle is and how much sun they have, right? It's known for being sunny Seattle, right? They get just about more rain than anybody else in the country, and they are located, if you drive up to Traverse City and then travel 3 hours north, that's the same latitude as Seattle, Washington. And this building is in a downtown area. So all these buildings are showing that it's possible. And now not only know that it's possible, it's becoming cheaper than any other form of energy. My solar panels that were purchased in 2010, in late 2010, were almost $7 a kilowatt or per watt installed. Today, that number is about $2.30 here in Ann Arbor. So that you can see the dramatic drop. And that's not including any kind of federal tax incentives or net metering rules or anything like that. That's just talking about the pure cost of solar. And the cost is coming down even further. The challenge now is getting enough people in the industry to work in the industry. The solar industry in Michigan employs, it would be the third largest utility company by size of the number of employees. You know, so there's, I believe it's 4,000 people employed in the solar industry in Michigan. So it's a pretty extraordinary thing that's happening, and Michigan needs to get on board as quickly as possible. We're going to be left behind other states, and we're going to see jobs lost here to other states that are really inviting the kind of innovative companies into their states.
Matt Grokoff spoke with WMUK's Andy Robbins by Skype. Grokoff is the founder of the Ann Arbor-based Thrive Collaborative. He was the keynote speaker for Western Michigan University's Net Zero Conference in June. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.